As beneficiaries of UMS Right, we want to understand those who are before us so that we can help those who follow after. As told through the eyes of supporters and faculty, students and grandparents, we know this podcast will help all of us understand how and why UMS Right has been so successful. This is The Right Way. So hello, everyone, all of our listeners. And look, this is Avery and Allie. This is our first recording for 2024, right? So I know we've released a couple in the last couple of weeks that we finished up in the fall of 23, but this is our first time back in the studio for 2024. And I'm excited about that, man. We've continued to get a lot of great feedback, and we certainly appreciate that. And you know, a lot of these that we have lined up, Avery, coming up, a lot of these guests, we've kind of heard from our listeners, right? Yeah. They keep sending, yeah. Hey, might yes. be kind of cool to talk to this person or that person. And today we've got a special treat, as always. You know, one of the things that really sets our school apart, to me, is you know, the history of our families here and how it we continue to see generational experiences for families. And you know, coming back to UMS Right or Julius T. Right, you know, that mix right there. And I can't help but think people do that because it's somewhere they love. You know, obviously, if you didn't like it, you wouldn't come back here, I wouldn't think. But today we have the chance to talk to Robert Hope Jr., and this is not to confuse any of you, but Robert Hope Jr. would be Mr. Hope, in my opinion, right? Someone that I've known for a long time. Robert is a graduate of the UMS class of 1979. We're going to talk a little bit about that because that's right when the military started to change. And has so many experiences on our campus, what he's been able to do over his tenure since I've known him and the amount of time he's given back to the school in so many ways of his time and energy is just really makes us who we are today. And then we also have the opportunity to talk to his son. That would be Robert III, Hope. And so Robert, unlike Mr. Hope and me, he's a little further down in the age requirement there, but just came back to Mobile last fall. And man, I've wanted to talk to Robert a long time, right? Really, when we first started this podcast, when we first tossed these ideas around, I know that Robert was one of the ones we wanted to talk to because he was just, his career here was just crazy, crazy good. But his demeanor and his leadership even excelled, even among our great students. So Robert Jr., being Mr. Hope, is a graduate of the class of 1979. He spent time, he got a degree from the University of Alabama School of Business, and also earned his Juris Doctorate from Stanford University. He married a Julius T. Wright School for Girls graduate. That's Miss Mary Shannon. And then they do have two children, Robert, as I introduced earlier, Robert III, and then Jeannie, class of 2017, Robert graduating in 2015. And I know Mr. Hope now is the CFO at Gulf Coast Trucking. He has been Alumnus of the Year. He has been inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame, a board member since 2000, and a past board chairman. And then Robert III, class of 2015, left the confines of this beautiful state and city and went to Massachusetts, right? And so finished up at Harvard, where he ran track and finished his degree. As I said, he just recently moved back. So he's working now at T-Level as a senior analyst, been back with them since September, but worked really a couple of different places after graduation. And he's engaged, following in his dad's footsteps, to also an alum of UMS Right, and that's Emma Goodlow. So so much more I could introduce you guys, but that's pretty impressive just to hear that about yourselves. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's all Allie wrote, all that. But I remembered most of it, but I wasn't going to be I'll get sidetracked a little bit. So, man, Mr. Hope, first of all, I know how I feel about my own children and having seen both of them go through the school and have watched them graduate from college and on doing their professional life now. Boy, it's not a much better feeling than that, huh?
It's really not. One of my proudest moments to see both of them graduate. And And to see them enjoy the whole process of coming through school. You know, a lot of kids, they're ready to get out of school, yeah. And both of mine really enjoyed the time they had here. And I think took advantage of the opportunities they had here.
Well, I think, you know, we talked to some seniors. Have we already released that one right before the holiday? So we talked to a group of four seniors, and that's kind of a unique experience. And I had one of the seniors say to me off air, I believe it was, and they were saying, you know, a lot of the people I hang around, whatever that means, different athletic teams or art events, and they said, you know, they're not very complimentary of their experience in high school. In other words, like you said, Robert, they're ready to get out of here and get on. I'm so glad that that's not the case here. I mean, you know, school's hard. It's just like work, man. I mean, it's called that for a reason, right? It demands our time and our effort and our energy. But, you know, there's an element of having an appreciation for where you are, who you're working for, or where you're in school. And I think that, talking to you there, Mr. Harvard, that kind of that adds to that experience, makes you want to come back, I hope.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I will say, you mentioned senior year.
Yeah.
I miss college. I loved college. I really miss senior
crazy?
Year of high school.
Yes. And I think I probably told y'all that when you were here, because I still tell seniors today, and I know Wes does as well. Hey, don't complain about this. This is the best time of your life, man. Mm-hmm. Your mom and dad are still going to take care of you. They're going to cook for you. They're going to clean your clothes. They're going to, you know, all that stuff. And then you just got to go be great at school. You get to college, that kind of just all flies out. It's all on you, right?
Yeah, you're on your own. You have to do your own laundry. You have to find your own food.
It's tough.
If it gets cold, you have to figure out what to wear for yourself. So it's a necessary step, but it's not all, you know, sunshine and daisies like I think people think it is.
Yeah, no doubt. I did college athletics too, and it was hard. But I see the same thing in my own boys. You know, they look at their experience here and their friendship here and their coaches and their teachers and not just the good times, but the difficult times too. And I think that's what really kind of helps set our school apart. That still matters, right?
Absolutely.
Robert, Mr. Hope, let's talk a little bit about the time. You were so involved throughout my whole tenure here in leadership in a lot of different ways. And I saw you take a school and help us move that forward, which is a hard thing to do when things are pretty good. But how does the school compare with your experience as a student here versus the experience your children had?
Well, I think when I was here, we still had the military through really all the way until I was a junior in high school when they announced that they were getting rid of the military. And of course, we were an all-boys school. I think the difference now is there's just much more opportunity to kind of find yourself as a student. And I think not to say that we didn't get a good education when I was here, but many of the things y'all do, for example, Project Engage, just it brings out the best student in kids, because kids are different. They're not going to all reply the same way, and I think it just makes a big difference. You've got to put the opportunity in front of the kid or in front of the student, and I think that's what the biggest difference is now, is there's much more opportunity to kind of find yourself as a student and as a person here now versus when I was here.
That's well said, and I think right in line with kind of a lot of our thoughts in that, you know, providing opportunities for a sense of belonging, right? Whatever that is, you know, through its athletics or the arts or some kind of club or organization. But, you know, I know you don't have those experiences like you had, Robert, as a student here in the 2000s, if you don't have a sense of belonging, right? That's just, I think the workplace is the same way, right? When we hire people now, we look for people. I mean, you know, there's this cultural fit, but there's also this, can they come in here and find a sense of belonging? I just think it's super important. College athletics like that, let me ask it a different way. Are all those guys that you ran with in college like you were?
No.
I mean that in a very complimentary way, buddy.
Well, in fact, we bonded over the fact that I was so different.
Oh. Y'all, and let me say this before you answer this. I'm talking in a very good way, but you're talking about a Trojan, buddy. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, your work ethic is legendary, right? Like, and I know you're not, I don't know what that makeup is, but you had it, and I wonder if other collegiate runners had it.
Well, they definitely did, okay. And many had it, you know, more than I did. I'll be the first to admit. You know, I was not, I had a really great coach, great parents that helped me have a lot of success in Alabama distance running. But once I got up to college, you know, at the NCAA level, not only do you have people from all over the country, you have people from all over the world. Some of the best distance runners are from Kenya and Ethiopia. If you watch the Olympics every year, they, you know, blow everyone else out of the water for the most part. And so it was an entirely new level of competition. And I was actually, you know, I was hoping to be recruited, but I was really a walk-on. Yeah. And so most of the people, you know, I went from being one of the sort of from a pure time standpoint, one of the leaders at UMS and Alabama, to kind of being on the bottom of the totem pole in some ways on the team. And that was a great learning experience. Yep. But like you said, a lot of cultural differences. You had people from all over the world. One of my best friends was from Ireland. Mm. He was a high jumper. So very different cultural backgrounds. And we found a way to get along for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience, but it did, I think there are those, and I had some friends in high school who went off to different parts of the country, and they love those parts of the country more, and they are still up there and probably will always be up there. For me, before I was even done with college, as much as I liked being up there, I did start to pretty seriously feel, okay, I've seen the other part of the country, and I like my home even more now.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because I think you're right. I think, you know, when you experience something like that, that you haven't experienced before, you talk about some of your classmates and those, some of those things stick. And, you know, we were talking before we went on air about a couple of those guys we've done, you know, that have moved to the West Coast and they've never come back. Right. And that's fine too. But I do think there's something that draws people, you know, to Mobile, to the Deep South. I think there's, and sometimes it feels like we apologize for that. And look, every part of the country, every part of the world has negative connotations with it, where they're from. But, you know, this is a really unique city, county, area we live in. And one of the things I think that makes it so unique is having a school like this in the midst of that.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I think that makes a difference in Mobile and why you see, like, when I graduated from high school, pretty much most of the folks that graduated in my class of 79, they had to go off once they graduated from college to find jobs, because Mobile was not necessarily doing well in that time frame. And now what's offered up, I think people see the advantages of coming back and to a city that's, you know, doing well and has educational opportunities as well as other opportunities. So
yeah, those are the quality of life things that families look for, right? Parks, recreation, entertainment, schools, churches, community centers. And another colleague of yours, Robert, you know, our mayor, Stimson, has had so much to do with that. And it's like, you're right, it's why you get Harvard graduates back. I mean, seriously. And I don't, I mean, what we've seen the last literally probably 10 years, and your dad knows this, Robert, you know, our enrollment numbers have really been a challenge for us, particularly in our lower divisions, because the product is so very good. Aldrich Marks and her team, they do such an unbelievable job that's actually become the biggest division of our school. When you were in school here, it was not. It was always high school, then middle school, then lower school. Now we have more students in lower school than any other division, and our numbers could be whatever we wanted them to be, right? Which we're not going to do that. We have a very specific goal in mind based on the mission of our school, but they don't just come back for the school. There's got to be those other things, Robert, those other opportunities for jobs and business.
And quality of life. I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, what Sandy's done with the city and really – what he helped do with this school is has made a big difference. And and not just this school, there are other good schools around.
Absolutely.
And I think there are no better bargains from an educational standpoint than what you can find here locally.
So you've been a member of the Board of Trustees, and you've been on every strategic plan that I've ever done. And because I've been here, I think I started a year, I was started here in 93, but I didn't start in administration until 99. So it was right as you came onto the board, I started and got to know you through that. But I mean, you did a long tenure as a vice chair or created that. And then, you know, as a chairman, what makes someone willing to give up that much of their time to deal with all the stuff that you have to deal with? It's crazy.
I think a lot of it is just how you're brought up. My parents, you know, kind of brought me up, you know, give back to kind of what made you. Mm-hmm. And so that's one reason. The other thing, and it kind of selfish, is because I knew I had kids coming here and hopefully one day I'll have grandkids coming here. And then, like I said earlier, it's just the school is so important to the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy it. I think I've missed two graduations since coming on the board, and that is one of the, to me, that is one of the most rewarding things is watch that graduation ceremony and watch a lot of those kids that I remember when they were, you know, in kindergarten and stuff, come across that stage, and that's special, and that's rewarding to me, and so I enjoy it.
Wow, that's... It's well said, because I mean, for our listeners, you know, there are some boards where I think, you know, it's nice to be considered a board member. You can put it on a resume or you know, a CV about, you know, and they don't require a lot, you know, one or two meetings a year. That's not the case in our school. And it's not because, you know, they're delving into things that they shouldn't. It's just because this is a complex organization, and it takes, you know, whoever's the head or the print, whatever. I mean, you got to have help. I mean, it's just, you can't know everything that there is to know anymore. That's just not the case. So you got to have people willing to give of their time. I mean, it's a huge sacrifice.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest positives that I've ever seen over my time period as a board member and really just having anything to do with the school was the 2008 strategic plan that Davis Pilot and Laura Clark were very instrumental in. And I think that was as important to this school as a lot of other things that we identify as being important. That's what I think really, we were kind of at the Y in the road and we made some good educated decisions based on that strategic plan that have certainly helped us many years later, including, I'm not sure y'all would have navigated through the COVID situation if we had not done some of the things that we identified in that 2008 plan, mainly technology. We really needed to do a lot. And I know, Doug, you and I were on the personnel committee in that study, and that we gained some ground there,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Those two areas probably as much as anything. So, you know, without giving away any trade secrets, but – a lot of the stuff we did in that 18 plan, and I'm looking at you, Avery, because you wouldn't know this being relatively new, or you, Allie, and y'all are both in digital media and marketing, and, you know, you have access to a lot of stuff. A lot of the stuff we did was kind of behind the scenes, and we had to invest literally a lot of money into it. And then it wasn't so that you could build a building. You couldn't see what you had done, right? And so people didn't know, or they didn't understand if it's $750,000 to do this or $125,000 to do that, you know, but it was part of that process that you're right. It not only propelled us, you know, moved us ahead, but it allowed us to execute a very important plan during that COVID time. But you're right. And then the personnel thing, you know, that was all about, look, hire the best people you can hire and make them accountable. Well, if you hire the best people, you have to have resources for that, and you have to have benefits that equal that. And the board was, let's do it. Let's get us a plan over the next 3 or 4 years. And now, you know, I've told you and reported to y'all on the board many times. I mean, if there's some, we can go get who we want. right? And then we have ability to keep them accountable for that. But you know, infrastructure always important, brick and mortar always important. We always want to, you know, but that human capital, probably the biggest thing we've ever done.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Those two things, I think, the technology and the personnel as part of that plan, I think were the most important things. And you know, strategic plans go, a lot of times you do all the planning, you put it in a binder and you put it up on the shelf, and that's the end of it. That did not happen with that particular plan. And Doug remembers this, for every board meeting after that, we started out by addressing, where are we with the strategic plan? Where are we with the strategic plan?
Still have my book, and it's completely, I mean, you know, I can go back and refer to that. But it also taught me, when I became head and we did the plan in 2018, I wanted a plan the same way. I wanted a plan that we as administrators could be held accountable for. And it was a blueprint for me, right? I mean, sometimes, you know, you have to pivot. COVID makes you pivot, whatever. A lot of things make you pivot. But, you know, it's a good blueprint. And then we just finished one last week for the next 4 years that I just got approved last week at the board meeting. And it's the same kind of way. I mean, it's just, you know, we learned that you know, not to make these pipe dreams, right? Like, these are things that you've got to execute, and you've got to have the ability to execute them. You have to administer those. So I tell people often, you know, probably the strategic planning is probably what I learned most as an administrator, especially a young administrator here, and how to keep things on that line so that you don't show up here one day and your school looks completely different than it used to. Right, and not in a good way.
Right,
not in a good way.
Yeah,
it's just interesting. What about that? So you were a junior when they dropped the military. I mean, do you remember as a student, what was your feeling about that when you first learned of that?
I remember it like it was yesterday. They had a special meeting in the auditorium, and we all went in there. And Mr. Russell Ladd, who was chairman of the board, he was tasked with telling us, and of course, just like it is now, the seniors sat closest up front and the juniors are right behind them. And those were the two classes that were the most upset about doing away with the military, because people that didn't understand or weren't there at the time, you kind of worked your way up, grades, extracurricular activities, conduct, and that's how you gained rank, so to speak. And so a lot of us in the junior and especially the senior class who had kind of bought into that and worked their way up, they felt like they were having something taken away from them. And it was a tough period there for a while, but certainly it was the right decision, I think. But, you know, the military brought a lot of good things with it, and, you know, we enjoyed it. A lot of us enjoyed it.
Do you still see remnants of this being a military school?
I do. The students and, you know, how they address adults, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. The respect that they show their parents and friends of their parents. I think a lot of that comes from the parent, probably having gone through the military. Mm-hmm. I know Robert and Jeannie, if they text me now, they still reply, yes, sir, no, sir, mm-hmm. you know, instead of thumbs up or anything.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you something. I'd trade about three of my kids in right now just for you to do that and not send me a thumbs up, Robert. Thank you for doing that.
Well, it's just, I'm a creature of habit.
Let me tell you what you are. You're more than that. I remember when you came and tested. Was he in first grade? What grade did he come in? Third?
Robert would have been going into the fourth
grade.
Grade was my first year here.
So whoever was testing you, the only one I remember is Debbie Reynolds, who was our assistant principal in lower school. And she came to admin meeting, whatever, that week. And she said, okay, I just saw a fourth grader, third grader going into fourth grade. Every time an adult walked in the room for the testing, that young man stood up. Stood up until we sat down. She was like, We're not even scoring his test. He's good to go. But that reminds me of what your dad just said. You know, he started that, and it picked.
Right.
It worked with you, and so great job there. I mean, that's amazing.
Had a great teacher.
Yeah,
and you know, families are extremely important in a lot of different ways. I think, from my understanding, is, you know, in the last couple of decades, in the last couple of years, I think there's been more of an emphasis on drawing a line between education and family life. And I, to the extent that has happened, I think it is a bit of a mistake, because school can kind of be like a second family in many ways. I think that's the whole idea, especially schools like this one that go above and beyond. But, you know, you can't replicate the home front anywhere else. And so I had great teachers in my parents. And then I was also very fortunate to have great teachers in my grandparents and my extended family as well. And, you know, just, we were talking a little bit before between, you know, the North and the South, or really the South and other parts of the country. I think from my own personal experience, at least so far, you know, there are, you know, certain communities in the North where the extended family is very, very important. And I could definitely see that play out in the students that came from those communities. And I think the South, you know, we kind of get teased sometimes a little bit for, you know, how close many of us are with our extended family. But I think it can be a really, really important complement to your formal, you know, more academic heavy type of education that you get in school.
Pretty good.
So
I'm gonna ask you the same question I asked your dad. When you were a student here, did you feel remnants of a military school, or what were your—
I did, and I loved it. And you know, again, I obviously, you know, I wasn't even a twinkle in the eye of my parents at the time. So I wasn't there. But from everything I've read, from what, you know, my parents have said, from what other people that were around at the time have said, you know, it seems like it was definitely the right move to make.
Yeah.
But I will be honest, you know, some of us kind of, you know, you walk down the hallways and there's a lot of, you know, we're really good about keeping track and keeping up with some of the souvenirs, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, in this room, there's some caps, military uniforms. And so we kind of looked on that with a little bit of envy because, you know, the uniforms were cool. So you didn't really get that part, but you did get the focus on discipline and the fact that, you know, you're not just here to learn a subject. You're here to learn how to conduct yourself before, you know, you go off to college or go out into the world. Because, again, once you're out of here, to some extent, you know, you're on your own. And a lot of people say, you know, college is the time to find yourself. There's one teacher in particular who sort of emphasized us that actually, no, the time to find yourself is before you go to college.
Wow.
Because, you know, once you're in college, you're going to be treated as an adult. And to the extent that you can figure out, you know, your worldview before you leave the confines of your high school and your family, the better off you'll be.
Wow. Well said. So, Robert, You were a runner as well. I mean, you were an athlete, track athlete at UMS. Who was your coach? Who coached you then?
The same coach that coached Robert.
Okay, Galley. I thought that was probably right. I just, the same coach that coached.
So, you know, I was thinking about this not too long ago when I heard Coach Galley was going to retire, but in the last 70 years, the school's only had two head track and field coaches. Don Kelly and Pat.
Wow, Don and Pat.
And two superb coaches. I mean,
gosh, that's kind of daunting to think about.
Yeah.
So that had to be really awesome for Pat to be able to coach the two of you. And then, were you always a runner, Robert? I mean, did you come up running? Did you do other sports before?
I was not. And, you know, one thing to my parents, great teachers, but they also kind of, there were certain things that they weren't going to let me figure out for myself.
I understand
such
that.
As yes sir.
Yeah.
But they weren't helicopter parents either.
Yeah.
You know, I never was told what I needed to study, how much I needed to study. Now, if there was a problem on the report card, then we would talk
Did
about it.
Did they have
it,
the same conversation with your sister? Or was it different?
I wasn't privy to all those conversations.
I'm kidding. She's one of my favorite all the time. I'm just wondering.
The thing, you know, there are two forms of intelligence, and this is kind of going off subject real quick. There, you know, there are two important forms of intelligence, and you know, I'm a bookish guy. I really like academics, but you know, common sense in many ways, probably most ways, is more important than book smarts. And let me tell you, Jeannie was born with some great common sense, and to this day, you know, she sets me right when it comes to street smarts on a regular basis.
That is so funny.
But to answer your original question, I was not introduced to running. With my parents didn't direct me in any specific way. I had no clue what a track star both my dad and my uncle were in high school. In many ways, until I got here, and frankly, you see the old team photos, and so you know, my father was very humble in that regard. And he, you know, as much as he loved running, and he continued running long after high school and college, and he, you know, still does to a certain extent in recent years. But he never said, you need to be a track guy. Mm. And so I didn't start doing track. I did all sorts of different sports before track and cross country. And what really decided it was fourth grade, just started at UMS, had to figure out the extracurriculars I was going to do. And my parents, you know, they did say, look, it would be good for you to at least do one sport a season, whatever sport you want to do, you can figure it out. Most of my friends were going out for the fall to do football. And in one of those potentially rare moments of extreme self-awareness, I looked in the mirror and realized going out for the football team might not be the most strategic decision for me to make. And I was aware that my dad ran, not to the extent that he did in high school, but, you know, he would run with the Carpe Diem running club. And I figured, well, if dad runs, maybe that's something I can do. I can try out this cross-country thing.
Wow. Another good, And I think you figuring that out, had your dad and mom pushed you, you know, whatever, would you have had the same work ethic that you demonstrated around here for 8 years, right? Or nine, however long it was. The time I remember seeing you in sixth grade running around here, probably when I first noticed you. But would you have ever had that, right? Would that have been your makeup? Because it was yours, right? It was, you owned it. It was your running.
And that's extremely important because, again, in college, a lot of very, very accomplished people going in. But frankly, some of them, you know, were driven, they weren't really given a choice. You know, their parents or whoever was caring for them were, you know, the term is that we would throw around is helicopter parents. And so once they got there and they were on their own, because it wasn't self-generated, you know, in some instances they crashed. And so, you know, it's important to be there for your children, but I'm, you know, to this day very thankful that while they were there, they were also, they also knew what we needed, Jeannie and I needed to figure out for our for ourselves.
Helicopter is, you know, you're dating yourself a little bit. So it's now, we commonly and very graciously refer to some of those as like lawnmower parents now. Lawnmower, right? You ever scalp something with a lawnmower? It gets so low. Yeah, it's a little closer than helicopter parents now. Not that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying. It just it makes the challenges different. You know, Mr. Hope, when – here's, I think, you know, there's so many accolades for Robert when he was a runner here, and I know that's not why he was doing them. I know that about him 100%. He's very humble and was a crazy competitor. But when somebody sets out to beat your record, you've been pretty good. And that's what all these guys, since you graduated, that's what they're after. They're after, I'm going to do this. I'm going to beat Robert Hope's this. That's what I heard after you left here. And I know that, but I'm just saying it was noticed, right? Your all of your accolades, all of your accomplishments because of your hard work, people noticed it. And even today, you know, that you and those Perry boys are kind of the – and that's who they were after. They were after you, like literally.
Well, they definitely got me. I mean, if you – and you know, one thing for the state overall, if you just look at the times that are run at the state, both in track and in cross country now, I mean, it is – some of my old high school buddies that I ran with, either that went to UMS with me or that I ran against at St. Paul's and McGill and other places, you know, we joke around now. You know, it'd be hard for us to even make the state meet, much less place in the state meet these days.
And do you think that's true? Or would you have changed something?
Well, I like to think that we would be more competitive if the state was more competitive.
Yeah,
back in
right.
My,
I'm
my
just
time.
Curious.
But,
yeah.
I think it is. I think the key takeaway is what the coaches have done for the state over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were like Galley. I mean, I think it's hard to compete. I'm biased, but I think sure. it's hard to compete with Galley's tenure if you just look at the sheer number of state championships he had. I'm not sure. He even knows how many state championships he has
no
at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a pretty good problem to have for a coach.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what the coaches over the years, like Galley and like some of the others who have really put a lot, I'm sure, of blood, sweat, and tears into the sport, the support they've gotten from their schools. And like you said, the athletes themselves that are, you know, every year there's a new crop that comes mm-hmm. in and they see the names that are on the leaderboards that, you know, had come before them. And they said, you know, I really respect him, but, and I'm also going to knock him off the leaderboard if I can.
Yeah. I mean, so, every record's going to be broken. I mean, it's just,
that's what records are for.
That's what they're for. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we keep them. And I didn't realize until you just said that. And then I compare that to your dad's running, you know, think about that from 79 to 15 to 2024. Were his times like when he ran Robert, Mr. Hope, were they like crazy better than yours or were they pretty similar? I mean,
no, they were definitely better. A good bit better. But it's really not just in the distance events. I mean, you had a son throwing the javelin, which, it's just more competition. And I think a lot of these kids are seeing people that go before them get the opportunity to go to the school they want to with the help of, you know, whether it's track or football or whatever sport it is. And I think that's been a big part. And then the other part, Robert hit on it, is when I ran, a lot of the track coaches for the other teams were the basketball coach or the volleyball coach. Now all the schools, public or private, they have a dedicated track and field coach now that knows what they're doing. And in addition to the kids getting better, the coaches are getting better. They're learning different techniques. And I think that's a big part of it and why you see these times and just the sport in general getting better. And nobody really – no college really recruited that much in Alabama for track and field when I was coming up. That's definitely changed.
You're right.
Definitely changed.
Because you got like – I think we got one going to Virginia mm-hmm. to run, mm-hmm. Joseph, his brother, you know, running at Auburn. You know, I think about Alex Reeves, who went, you mentioned Jeb. And anyway, we probably have had through the years more track and field athletes at the collegiate level than probably any other sport. Maybe baseball might be a little, but I don't think so. I think it's probably more at track and field, which speaks of some really incredible. I mean, because look, you think about Edra Finley. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about a bunch of kids that.
Edra, Rose Brockovich.
Brockovich at Tulane. I mean, that's kind of crazy to think about. Who? Gilmore's.
Catherine Lazarchik.
Lazarchik's.
Yeah.
That's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
When did that start? When did this go? When did that start? When did we become a track and field, so much emphasis on that?
Well, like I said earlier, Don Kelly, who came before Coach Galley, he produced two NCAA All-Americans in Greer Radcliffe and Forrest Rayford when they went to Tennessee.
That's right.
And, I mean, to be an NCAA All-American, that's in track and field, that's tough, and those two guys did that. And, you know, just, I don't know, it kind of took off. I would say around the time that Robert's group was coming through is when you really started seeing a noticeable difference.
It's crazy.
A lot of kids got a lot of opportunities to go places that they probably wouldn't have.
I know we're leaving 100 out, but I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about Kelly
Cutrell.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that it's just, man, no wonder Galley's got so many state championships. How do you think y'all would have done, or you'd have run in 6A? Like what they're having to do now. I mean, how were those times compared? What were you, when you were here, were we four?
we were
4 or 5.
Well, things started changing, I believe, my junior and senior year for track, because in indoor, so traditionally, so dad had an indoor season fairly consistently back when he was coming up, but I'm not exactly sure when, but for a while, there was no indoor season.
And where to have it.
Right.
So they built that facility in Priceville, and now,
exactly. And so a big change came when they built the indoor facility up in Birmingham, and all of a sudden we had an indoor season, but the participation wasn't like outdoor, and so they decided to combine a couple of the divisions. So if I remember correctly, 4A and 5A were kind of together during indoor season. Yeah. And that was the first taste, in some respects, we had of competing against the 5A level. 6A, we would always race against them.
Right.
In fact, a lot of my regular competition in high school were, you know, 6A schools, whether it was down here with McGill. McGill, you know, usually had a good crop of distance runners. St. Paul's in my day was 5A. I'm not even sure where they are now, but they usually had a good crop. And then, you know, most of the 6A Birmingham schools had a good crop of distance runners as well. And so I would like to think that we would, you know, would have risen to the, you know, risen to the challenge had we been put up at in 6A, both from a cross-country standpoint and from a broader, you know, track and field standpoint. But it's interesting coming back, learning more about how the AHSAA system works now.
When you let me know when you get that figured out, and then come to my office and see if you can educate me, because I don't quite, but I'm glad you're listening. Mm-hmm. I need help figuring that out. What do you hope for the next the future of UMS, right? What is like Mr. Hope's plan, or I mean, what do you want to see us focus on?
My hope, and this is kind of a general comment, but my hope is that we continue to do what I see going on in board meetings and really all around the school, and that is, we're doing a very good job and we're doing great, but we know we can do better. And I've never seen, whether it's in a board meeting and y'all give us data back on how the students are doing and they're doing excellent, I've never seen anybody say, all right, well, we've done our job. It's always, all right, we've done our job. How can we do better going forward?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's kept the school going for 130 years. I would like to see us keep that and not lose that. Yeah. That would be my biggest hope.
What about you, Robert?
Well, I would say, you know, the thing I appreciated most about the school, I mentioned worldview earlier, but it gave me a really solid worldview. And what I mean by worldview is essentially, you know, how the world works in terms of, you know, how people interact with each other, what drives people, what actually moves the world. And so, you know, part of that is academic. You know, many of my teachers, especially starting junior and senior year, were writing, partially at least, the AP exams. I mean, I don't think it's kind of harder to get better academic quality than that. And so I definitely hope that continues. But even more importantly than that, I hope that the emphasis on forming that worldview, both on the academic side, but also on, you know, how to conduct yourself as a young adult and as you enter the
talk to me
the
about that
world.
A little bit. Give me a little better. I think I know what you're talking about, but give me an example of that.
Well, one of the obvious ones is, and you know, people my age will roll their eyes at this, I think, but you know, the last few years. And this isn't just for young people. This is in the working world, at least what I've witnessed so far, has been a emphasis on making things more and more casual. You know, it's easier. It's more efficient. Oh, we're not meeting with clients today. There's no reason to wear a suit if we're just with each other. And, you know, one thing UMS really taught us, we weren't wearing a coat and tie every day, but every Thursday you better have on your tie. And if it was tied improperly, you would know very, very quickly. And I think that is important, and I do think we, the U.S., the world to some extent, have gotten a little too casual. There is times where you should be wearing a T-shirt instead of a suit. Yeah. Let's not overdo it.
Yeah.
But there are other times where, yeah, put on a suit. And, you know, it's not that much to ask to wear a tie, I don't think. And I think UMS did a good job of educating people in sort of a subtle way. Yeah, there are times where just wear a T-shirt, just wear a button-down, just wear a polo shirt. Mm. But for certain things, yeah, you need to, even if no one else is going to be wearing a tie, it can really mean a lot to show up and wear a tie. And I think that has personally helped me out a lot.
So
because that's the first thing you see,
whether
you're in college or whether you're in a career, what people are wearing when they walk in for a meeting. And y'all know this better than me. Y'all have been in the real world for longer than I have, but I've been shocked at, you know, some of the most important meetings that I've been involved in, that some of my bosses have been involved in. I've been shocked at sometimes how people dress nowadays for those meetings. And maybe the clients, maybe the people we're talking to don't notice, maybe they don't care anymore, but I'm pretty sure some of them do. And you can have a great presentation, you can have a great pitch, you can be the expert on what you're talking about, but at the end of the day, we are human. Human nature tends to stay the same over time. And, you know, since we were building pyramids, what people have worn, dress, has always mattered. And it's the first thing you notice when someone walks into a room. So there are other things that you can go on about.
You can stop. That's pretty good. I mean,
I think that was kind of the most obvious.
I'm convicted.
That was one of the most obvious things that, you know, you really got from UMS. And
interesting.
It went beyond just wearing the uniform, because there's a lot of schools where you're required to wear the uniform.
Yeah, we do school visits often, you know, the administrative team. And I just had a group come back a couple of weeks ago from fine schools. I'm not going to say where they are, but really fine schools. And to quote your dad, Mr. Hope, we're a bargain compared to what they're charging for tuition. Like, bargain's not even, I mean, we're dirt cheap of that, you know, the dirt cheap store. Oh, you've probably never been in there, but anyway, we're the dirt cheap of that. But one of the things, and they have some great ideas, but one of the things the leadership team brought to me, back to me, was like, I was just so casual, right? And, you know, and we get that way sometimes too. You know, we get hyper-focused on other things, and we let the little things go a little bit, and you look up and all of a sudden everybody needs. But that's a really interesting point that you bring up. I don't know that I've thought of it that way.
Well, and you know, you notice, I'm sure you've noticed more than I have. You've been around for longer than I have, but to me at least, it seems that the people that are more, the more notorious casual dressers also tend to act more casually. And I mean, there are always exceptions that prove the rule, but I think, again, if you go to the effort to put on a tie, I think from the get-go, you are kind of in a more formal frame of mind.
Did you tell him to come in here and say this stuff, Robert?
No,
you quit wearing tie. I quit wearing a tie when you quit wearing a tie. I followed your lead.
Yeah.
I'm blaming it on somebody. I'm kidding.
He did. When I went to work for Gulf Coast Truck, I quit wearing a tie, and he goes, is that what you wear to work now?
I just complimented you when you came in here on your jacket, Robert.
Oh, well, thank
you. It's great. I mean, that is – is that a 40 short? Is that a 40 short or is that a 42?
I think it's a 38.
Oh, well, you're going to outgrow that. Just bring it to me. I'm not growing anymore. Wow, that's incredible insight. Tell me some guys and ladies that you graduated with. Tell me some of them. Who am I thinking about? I know that was just a year before Grant, my son, graduated. But who were your running mates?
Well, who graduated with me, he was, you know, we pretty much did all of our workouts together. We were always racing each other. Was Anthony Fant.
Oh, yeah.
And he's at medical school at South now.
All right.
And we try to keep in touch. Another really good friend of mine, Brown Sisson.
Yeah.
And we sort
Mr.
of
basketball man.
Exactly. And we sort of followed similar paths. He went to Duke for undergraduate, and then ended up in New York doing some similar things to what I was doing in New York, and he's still up there.
He's kind of a bad dude too, man. Right? I mean, he's a smart kid.
He's sharp.
He's smart.
Yeah, you
kid,
don't want to go toe-to-toe.
No, he's a smart boy.
And he was our valedictorian as well. We had Rose Bruckowitz, who we already mentioned. She was a pole vaulter at Tulane. she's also up in New York now. And so really? I actually have seen them a few times, and it was kind of nice, you know, having the little UMS camaraderie in the alien big city. Yeah. So that was, I appreciated that. We had the Maisel twins.
Yeah.
Annie was a salutatorian. Both of them were sharp as a whip
really,
as well.
Really, really, really cool girls.
William Hooper.
Yeah.
And
Florida State man, I think, wasn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. He was another.
Seminole.
Yeah.
Another great friend of mine.
God, he was a good boy. Now Hooper, you know, he's a pretty good tennis player.
He was.
And he liked to run that mouth a little bit playing tennis too. Like, he knew he was pretty good. I used to love to watch him play. Because it was just subtle enough. I mean, he would have people, like, fired up playing against him. And remember, he would hit everything back. I know you've seen him play before.
Well, how we met, which was a couple of years before I went to UMS, was I made the mistake of trying to play tennis competitively for a little while before I discovered running. And we had a little, I think it was a... some tournament somewhere around Mobile. I can't remember what the league was. But through some fluke of the scheduling, they put me with William. Mm. And not only did I not win a single set, I know I did not win a single game. And it's possible I didn't win a single point.
I think you made the right selection. So did he. Yeah.
So, in fact, I came home and I asked him, look, I'm trying to get into tennis. Are you still playing? He's like, yeah, I'm playing. I was like, oh, well, maybe we can hit some balls sometimes, and he responds with, yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Get him on the pickleball court. You probably outmaneuver him on the pickleball court.
We'll see.
And Mr. Robert, what's Jeannie doing? Like,
Jeannie's here in Mobile, and she works for the Maisels over at Guff Distributing, and she does a little bit of everything. She was at the Senior Bowl all day Saturday. But she's going strong.
Yeah. And y'all live across the bay?
We do.
Yeah.
The day after Jeannie graduated, that was a Thursday night. We loaded up, the moving van and moved across the bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it feel like home when you came to see him? I mean, was that okay? Did you miss your childhood area over here? Or were you okay with that when you first started coming back?
I missed Mobile a little bit. So, you know, at this point, I was coming home for, you know, Christmas you know, certain weeks in the summers. But, you know, when we were even little children, they would pack up every summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents thought, you know, the commute's worth it to you know, spend 3 months out of the year over the bay. And I really appreciated that. On one hand, yes, the bay is beautiful. There's a lot to do over there in the summer. But the real thing was, you know, for 3 months out of the year, you know, I was living every day, you know, had lunch and supper, certainly supper every night with my grandparents, with my mom's parents. And, you know, we were best friends, you know, and I can't, you know, that talking about the extended family, that really helped me out a lot. And so you know, it was really nice that my parents were willing to, you know, do the commute, which is only getting longer and longer these days, but it was still long, you know, back then every day to kind of give us that experience.
I moved over there like in 2018 or something, when my wife retired. So we moved to Fairhope because, you know, I grew up over there. And after about 3 months, I was like, this is not the same drive I had when I was in high school, buddy. I mean, it's 40 minutes from when you get off the Bayway to get home. So we had to rethink that. But it's a great experience. I just can't believe that about you. I didn't know that about your mom's parents. That's that's really, really cool.
We had a little guest house in the back, and so that's where we would stay. And so nowadays when Jeannie and I come over to visit, well, that's actually where I'm living now.
Okay.
So during COVID.
Are you paying rent?
Not yet.
I tried, Robert. I tried, man.
Thank you, Doug.
I'm just saying, man, I'm messing with you.
No, I've got the best deal you could imagine. You know, I'm under a different roof, so, you know, when I start annoying them, they can kick me next door. But I also, you know, not only do I not pay rent, but you know, they'll cook for me.
That's
every
awesome.
Now and then
too. So yours is actually like high school and now postgraduate professional is really good for you too.
We've come the full circle.
Mr. Hope, don't I think Grant and Jeb both, and Grant's wife, I think they ate at my house. I think they ate at my house about three or four times a week. So it's, I told Jan, I'm like, this, we have less now than we had. I mean, you know, both my kids work and stuff, and anyway, it's awesome. I'm messing with you because
well,
I know
you're very, they're very,
I know they're glad
to,
you're home. I mean, I know they're glad you're there.
I think they are.
I know they are.
We are.
I asked forever. I was so worried you were going to be one of those. And you still might, but I was so worried. I was like, Robert Hope will never come back to Mobile. You know, I mean, I'm glad you are. I think you're an important, your family's important to the school, your dad, obviously, and I think you're going to be the same kind of leader, you know, should you ever choose to engage in that. And that makes me really, really glad.
He loved the job that he had in Washington, I know, because I've heard him say it a number of times. But at the end of the day, the statement that he made to me was, when I raise a family, I'm going to raise it back at home.
And I mean, you know,
I get that.
It takes precedent over everything. It should, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. You've told us today, you've demonstrated the importance of that and why and who you are today because of how you were raised and the people you were around. Did you have a favorite teacher when you were here? Was there an area that, were you more of a math guy or were you more of a literature reader? I can't remember.
I was definitely, I felt this way and I was told both from the English teachers and from the math teachers that I was definitely better at English writing. And then my passion for a very long time has been history.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that a lot of people today, you know, think, oh, it's memorizing dates. It's not that useful. But I think, you know, the truly understanding what people have done in the past is really important. And it's has always been a passion of mine. It's kind of what got me interested in school to begin with, and it continues to be a passion of mine. And so I was always better on that side, but thankfully we had, you know, great math teachers. And so I was able to kind of, you know, do what I needed to do on the math side as well in the sciences.
Yeah. Cause you would have had Miss Guyton.
I had Miss Guyton in terms of favorite teachers.
Yeah. Or the ones you don't like. It doesn't matter to me. We'll hit some names out there.
Again, on the topic of history, my first teacher after coming here in fourth grade was Miss Oswald. She was incredible. And, you know, I was, you know, as a fourth grader starting at a new school, sure, I knew some of the students that were here already, but it's an intimidating, it's an intimidating thing. And she really had a really enjoyable way of teaching, but she also sort of looked out for me. And so I'll always be thankful for that. But, you know, on the flip side, at the end of my tour of duty, if you will, you know, there were just some incredible, and I can't begin to try to pick out one or two favorites, but Miss Guyton was so effective. Such a joy to be around Miss Rouse.
Yeah.
Now I will say this about Miss Rouse.
Sure.
She's going to teach you math. And it was difficult, but I felt so prepared when I got to college in all of my subjects, but especially, you know, after being brought through the gauntlet with Miss Rouse, Miss Roberts.
Yeah.
She started teaching. I think she had taught it a little bit in the past, but she started teaching a AP art history class. Mm-hmm. And, that was one of, you know, it was a smaller class. So we really kind of, came together, and bonded and she continued to be a great mentor for me as well. Miss Phillips. I mean, I can keep running down.
No, that's awesome.
I can keep running down the list, but you know, I again, talking about the human capital and just the quality of the teachers we have, you know, you can't, at the end of the day, that's what that's what a school is all about.
Did Mary Shannon want, were y'all pulling for him to go away to school or did you want him closer?
We certainly wanted him to do what he wanted to do. And while we knew he wanted to go to Harvard, we kind of didn't think it would ever happen. And I went with him to the University of Alabama, and he had a great visit there.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that was what was going to happen. And one day he came downstairs in fall of his senior year, and he goes, oh, here's my letter, I got in Harvard, and we both kind of, and then he went back upstairs, and I followed him up there, and I said, "Are you going?" And he said, "Yeah, I think I am." So,
wow,
that's how that. Wow, happened. But that, no, we wanted him to go wherever he wanted.
I know, but I remember again different kids, you know, but thinking about my boys and. I was self, you know, there was a self-serving side of it. Man, yeah. I really want to see him, you know, perform or play or whatever. I was just, anyway, that's the right decision? Harvard the right decision?
Definitely. If I could do it again, I definitely would have. And, you know, to be blunt, there have been a lot of headlines, particularly in the last couple of months,
sure.
that are very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just, you know, emphasize to people that, you know, there are the things that make the headlines.
Right.
And those tend to be from the people that, you know, speak the loudest.
Write the headlines. Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily, you know, representative of the larger body. And, you know, like many of the great teachers I had at UMS, the professors that I had there were outstanding.
Good.
And sure, there's some, you know, there were some that were a little combative. But, you know, that's kind of part of, I would say, growing up, and I would say most of them, you know, actually, once they learned that I was, you know, some kid from Mobile, Alabama that, you know, had a Southern accent and, you know, probably had different views than, you know, perhaps the consensus. If anything, they wanted to hear from me more. So, you know, I really enjoyed my time there. I really enjoyed, you know, if you can spend some time in a different part of the world, in a different part of the country, I think it can do you good. In my case, it actually made me like home even more. Hmm. So, you know, that's something to consider is, you know, if you go away for a while, it might make you enjoy home even more. And, you know, it's nice to live with for 4 years people from, you know, all over the world.
Yeah.
And to sort of, again, that sense of worldview, kind of learn, you know, how other people think and how other, you know, what drives other people and you know, how that's similar but also different to, you know, how you've been brought up.
Very interesting. So you would do it again. You would do it again, Mr. Hope? Would you since 2000? Would you be on a board member again? Would you go through all that?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. It's and I'm sincere when I say this, it has been the most rewarding, I don't even want to call it a job, but it has been the most rewarding experience to be a small part, you know, of the school.
Sometimes a bigger part than you even wanted to be. I mean, you know, it's never easy, is it? I mean, there's some challenges, buddy.
It's not easy running a private school, as you well know. You know, anything from enrollment to finance to everything else that y'all have to deal with, it's tough, and you better stay at the top of your game.
Yeah, right. Well, I told y'all we would kick an hour pretty quick, right? So we just y'all have been awesome. I didn't even get to any of my questions, so which is fine. You answered them all, so I didn't have to ask them. I want you to know that, first of all, Mr. Hope, I mean, you know, again, sincere appreciation on behalf of all of us who've had the opportunity to work for you and with you through the years. That support, as you know, in your own private world business, you know, that support is important. And then, you know, being able to sit across from your son is that really does my heart good, because I've always admired you, Robert, your work ethic, your demeanor, your sense of occasion, all those things about you. And you know, I'm glad you're here, man. I'm glad y'all are here, and I look forward to a long time to. Or a few years anyway, not a long time. A few years, you know, to be with you. Maybe when y'all get married and have children, you'll look at our school.
Oh, definitely.
Look, I'm not going to do you like I have to do a lot of them. You're not going to go to 8 different schools and then come here last. Just come over here. It's the best thing going. I'm just telling you that right now.
Yes, sir.
I know y'all, it's the middle of the week when we're meeting. Thank y'all for taking the time to do that for me, man. That means a lot.
Thank you for having us.
I hope you had fun. I had a blast.
I
had a blast. And I hope all of you enjoyed it, because these are two gentlemen that have been so influential in our school and continue to be. And I know you loved hearing from them. as much as I like to talking to them. So for Avery and Allie, this is the right way. Listen, if you have guests out there that you think might be interested in talking to us, you can email Allie or Avery, and we'll do our best to get them on here. But again, Happy New Year, happy 2024, and we'll talk to everybody soon.